Welcome back to Extra Features Interview. Today we have a fantastic film called The Mutineer. And in these troubled times, the film kind of fits, I think, at times. It's John Jaquish. Hey, thanks for bringing this film to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
So before we even start, I gotta discuss location. You're filming in Appalachia?
Yeah.
Now, how many people even know where Appalachia is? I actually do. Even being Canadian, I know where Appalachia is. But why Appalachia?
Yeah, I guess that's a good point. I guess outside of the U.S., I don't know how familiar people are with Appalachia. Appalachia, that's actually, yeah, how they pronounce it there. It's basically West Virginia, southern Pennsylvania, the mountain range that runs up west, but typically it's, you know, rural area, you know, lower class, white, mostly white, you know, population. But I've lived in Pittsburgh. It's actually called the Paris of Appalachia, believe it or not. I don't know if I would term it as that, but that's what some people call it, or I've heard it termed that. But yeah, I've traveled around a lot and kind of got used to the area and thought this would be a good setting for this film.
You have a quote to start off your film. What was the reason for that?
You know, I honestly can't really say why that kind of stuck with me. I read it, I was doing some research and just came up, you know, just came across the name The Mutineer. And I guess it was actually quoted at the beginning of Moby Dick, the novel. And I think that's where I originally saw it. And for whatever reason, I just felt like it connected with the sort of themes of authority and rebellion and, you know, in the film. And so that kind of stuck with me as I was writing it.
You know, I'm going to have to ask you, did you finish Moby Dick?
I did. Yeah. I it's one of my favorite books actually, but I only read it once, but that was enough for right now.
Fair enough. I've read the book too. It's a long book, so
yeah.
It's all good.
Yeah.
You filmed it all in black and white. Was there a reason for that? Cost, I presume?
Yeah, well, cost, yeah. I guess sort of creatively, I don't think there was sort of for some reason I always envisioned it in black and white. Whenever I thought about the story, I just pictured it in black and white. I just always wanted to shoot something in black and white. And I knew I wanted to shoot on film. So black and white is, of course, less expensive than color. I do think that there's something that sort of focuses your attention more with black and white, for certain things, you know, the next thing that I shoot will probably be in color, but just something I wanted to try out. And I felt like this film would, for some reason, be a good fit for black and white.
Now, you have a very old house, it looks like, in your photos. Now, did you borrow it, stumble it, rent it, Airbnb it? How'd you find it?
Yeah, so I had been location scouting for, I think, about a year before I found this place. The trouble was, I knew we were going to be kind of messing the place up a little bit. So I was uncomfortable going into a house where people were living there and that was their home. And, you know, we were going to be throwing grenades through the windows and shooting off guns inside. So, but all the places that weren't currently occupied, were really run down. So we finally found this place. It was not in terrible shape. We did have to do a little bit of decorating inside before we shot. But it just had the structure and sort of, you know, the floor was in one piece. It wasn't going to fall in on us. There was furniture there already, so we could kind of shoot. We had to do, you know, we had to move some junk out and bring some, set decoration in, but, yeah, it wasn't too bad as far as getting that prepped for shooting.
Okay, so did you rented the house then? Is what I'm understanding?
And what's that?
Did you rent the house?
We paid a small fee to the owner of the property. I mean, we shot for about a month. I mean, so he wasn't using it for anything. So it was not like we were really putting him out too much by using it. But you know, we still paid for the location. It was just really through the West Virginia film office that I found it. They put me in touch with the owner. So.
Okay, I want to go. Let's discuss your acting, since we're going to get there anyway. Where'd you find your crew?
Yeah, so the main actors, the one that plays Lowell, which is Harris Duran, Michael Barra plays Aloysius. They were bookers, and I went through Backstage to find them. It's like an online casting service. Actually, I think Harris I found through Mandy, I believe, Mandy.com. It's a funny story about Michael Barra. His roommate actually auditioned for the role, and he asked Michael to read with him. Michael's like, hey, you know, you mind if I audition too? And I actually liked his, you know, his, I definitely liked his rendition of it the most. So I had to unfortunately tell the roommate that we were more interested in, in Michael. But, yeah, so, and then the other characters were locals to Pittsburgh. The other person was Jim Donovan. He played, the character Michael, the guy that comes in on the bike. He was from New Jersey, and found him, I think, on either Backstage or Mandy. It was online. But the two others in the film, the characters' names are Leland and the one has.
Continue.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, then there are the two brothers in the film, Jay and Leland, the character names. The one guy has long hair and tattoos. They were from, actually, they have never acted before in a film.
They look like locals to me.
What's that?
They look like locals.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. They're actually, yeah, so we shot in West Virginia, but they're from, we shot in the northern panhandle of West Virginia. They're from the southern tip of West Virginia, so they're more in the south.
So they're close to Kentucky? Or,
yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah, they're right on the border of Kentucky and close to
exactly what I expected.
North Carolina.
Perfect, exactly what I expected. Yeah. It was good.
Right, yeah. So, they're the Walker brothers, Michael Walker and Myron Walker. So Michael Walker, I've actually worked with, I shot a short film. I did work with him before, and I was introduced to his brother, and they were two of the most interesting people I've ever met. So they would work for the film. It was an experiment to put them on film. Myron's not, you know, the thespian or anything, but he has this physical presence that I think worked. I was hoping to add a little bit of realism to the film, and I think they gave that in a certain extent. And I didn't really have to roll too much for lines or complicated dialogue. So, and they made shooting a lot more interesting. They had plenty of stories to tell to the crew and other cast members. Myron actually helped me build most of them. He spends a lot of time making explosives and shooting off guns on his property. So he made, his whole idea was that exploding arrow. He made that. He designed that, and it was pretty ingenious, but he also built the cage that one of the one of the characters has put in. So yeah, it was a very, very culturally eclectic mix of actors, on. That was interesting, but, so yeah, it was kind of a hodgepodge putting people together, but you know, it was experimental ultimately to see if that worked.
I want to discuss the decorations in the house. You have I put a note saying ugly couch. Did you bring that in? Was that there when you got that? That is one hideous looking couch in black and white.
Oh yeah. And it was, I think it was sort of puke orange, the color of it.
Oh.
Yeah. So that stayed in the house. That was there when we got there. I thought, well, that looks pretty good.
And the artwork on the walls, was it designed? Was that you to put the bird photos up, or is it just there when you got there? Everything's a bird photo.
I brought those in, actually. I wanted, you know, the owner, the person that lived there, the veterinarian, the old veterinarian. You know, I thought that might sort of fit with him, and I wanted some continuity in the art direction. So I saw some Audubon pictures of, or, you know, paintings of birds, and got a bunch of those and thought I'd put those through the house.
So I have a question. The sheriff deputy cleaning up his own mess, I thought that was kind of funny. They would even have somebody.
Yeah, right.
What's he doing?
Oh, when he knocks over the vase.
Yes.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's just one of those moments of sort of doesn't know what to do and, you know, no, he kind of screwed up by, he's trying to sneak into the house, he breaks a vase.
Yes.
right. And, you know, I like to put in those little moments, just sort of.
For comedy?
You know,
or?
Not take it too seriously. I mean, it's supposed to be comedic, but, yeah, I think there's sort of a absurd element to the whole thing, that the whole idea of what they're trying to do is a little absurd. So I think, you know, to not take it too seriously was sort of my idea going into it.
Okay. One thing, did you go down in the basement in the house before you filmed down there?
Once. Yeah.
That is one scary basement.
Oh yeah. Yep. Yeah. That was, those were the cleanest parts of the basement that we filmed in. You just imagine the rest of it. There were old jars of pickled foods that were in the far corners, growing, you know, all sorts of colonies, lots of cobwebs. But we didn't want to spend too much time down there if we didn't have to.
Okay, at one point, I wrote the bad guys walk out of the house, because I didn't really want to spoil the film, so I'll kind of leave it at that. I thought that was kind of strange. They just left, so I mean, like you're saying, you can't really take this seriously at times. I mean, I thought the sheriff would have stopped them at one point, but they don't really.
You, when they leave the property?
Yes.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's, I mean, there's some stylization to the story. I mean, it's, but you know, I mean, this story was based on what was sort of a unbelievable event in itself. This was based on a true story, actually. There was a guy about 15 years ago in Texas, that he was stopped at a traffic stop. He had a gun in his car. They tried to arrest him. He bit the arresting officer. He got out on bail, never showed up for his trial. He fled to he had about 50 acres near Dallas. He fled to his property, renounced citizenship to the U.S., and just refused to leave. And it was the longest standoff with local police in U.S. history. It lasted for 10 years that he never left this property. And actually Chuck Norris flew in on a helicopter to try to help this guy, to give him, I don't know, legal advice of some sort. However, Chuck Norris is, you know, able to give legal advice, but, he, Yeah, I mean, I don't know what – I think they finally dropped the charges on it and just sort of let him go. But, yeah, it was a pretty bizarre story that it was based on. So the other thing, I mean, they didn't – they let him go. They didn't charge the property because they were afraid of another Waco incident. I don't know if you remember in the 90s, but there was a similar incident with Waco, the people that sort of – I mean, it wasn't – I don't know if it was really that they were trying to secede, but they had their own sort of group on this property, and they were armed, and there was a big slaughter when the ATF and, you know, FBI or whatever the organization was stormed the property. So they wanted to avoid that. I mean, as far as this film goes, you know, there's some quality there to this sort of local bumbling police force that, you know, that's sort of in over its head, just as much as the criminals are, or the, you know, the main characters.
You have a scene that they're outside and they're all sitting with chairs. I've got a weird question. Where did they find the rest of the chairs? There weren't that many in the house.
Well, there's the dining room, but yeah, I think they had, I think we had moved the chairs for the operation scene, and they may have moved. Yeah, it wasn't really, you know, explained in the film or shown, but there was a dining room table that the Aloysius characters operated on, so they just grabbed the chairs around the dining room and brought them outside for their vote or election.
I have in writing of your script, you introduced two females, I say fairly early, about 40 minutes in maybe. They don't do much, I guess is what I'm saying. Are they just there to bring them stuff?
Yeah, I mean, you know, they, the thing is, I had more written for them. The one actress, Rachel, she's actually an excellent actress, and she was only available for like a week. We had her for like a week because she was doing a play right after that, so she had to start rehearsals for that. So I decided to use her because she was such a good actress, and I mean, it turned out that I wasn't really able to give her the opportunity to show her acting skills. So yeah, I would have liked to show her and the other actress, Sarah Reed, a lot more, but just the scheduling and the timing, we that kind of got chopped down because ultimately, story-wise, it was more about Lowell and Aloysius and the fight between them.
Absolutely. I agree with you. I was just wondering. I was just like, okay, I'm going to ask, did they get cut? I mean, I felt kind of bad for them.
Right, yeah.
I'm just like, okay, I'm going to ask. Where did the flag idea come from?
It was actually a reference to Seven Samurai, as bizarre as that is. I mean, it kind of fit in. It wasn't just a sort of arbitrary reference. They kind of, you know, they were seceding. They needed a sort of a symbolic item for them to kind of rally around, or at least Myron and or I guess Leland and Lowell felt. We had Leland design the flag, and it was sort of a very vague reference to, I took it from Seven Samurai, and they kind of rally around that, but it ends up being an instrument of, them fighting about.
Yeah, these guys don't seem to get along too well, I've noticed.
Right. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I was just going to say, is this for guys that want to start their own country and do this, do that? I thought they would get along a little bit better, I guess is what I'm trying to get at.
Well, there's always that one guy, you know.
Well, that one guy definitely was not getting along with the other guys.
Right. Yeah, no, that was kind of maybe the point, you know, sort of. There's always going to be, in any sort of organization or undertaking, there's always going to be some some person, you know, because of just human nature, you know, that's going to sort of, there's no perfect system that can control, just personality, human psychology, and, you know, this film is kind of that in a microcosm, but.
I just figured they were mad at him because he ate all the food all the time.
Yeah, well, that's too.
Because he seems to eat a lot.
Yeah, right.
The fish in the water. I like that scene a lot. I thought it was enjoyable. Was the water cold, or was this filmed in the summer?
It was in the summer. It was, the water wasn't cold, but it was very dirty. It was this just a pond in the middle of the property. And I told Michael Barra that I would go in with him. If he went in, first of all, I said, you know, you don't have to do this. We can figure out some way to do this. But he was a really good sport about it. He insisted. He said, no, let's do it. And I said, well, I'll go in with you. You know, I'll run the camera myself and walk in after you. I didn't fall in, but, you know, yeah. So he took one for the team. And, unfortunately we didn't have running water on the property. So we just kind of had to use a bunch of water bottles and rinse them off. And, we took them back to the, place we were staying and he got a shower, but yeah, so.
And, so where did you get the fish from then? Cause they look like they're from the water. Like they look very fresh.
Yeah. It was a catfish. We got it from a fish market in Pittsburgh. So it was frozen. So we let it thaw out and just, you know, brought it right into the water. So he brought it up as it had already been killed, you know, and he just pretended to, you know, acted like he was smacked, put it out of its senses. But
where do I want to go next? Oh, the combat in the field. I hope I'm not ruining anything. Did you rehearse that ahead of time? And how long did that take?
Yeah, we had a fight coordinator, a great guy. So I think we did one full day where we didn't shoot anything and they just rehearsed, and then we had them just rehearsing, and then we shot it the second half of that day. Okay. So the fight coordinator, Ray Rodriguez, he was a great guy. So that all came together as far as the fight coordination goes pretty well.
So, you finished your film. Did you take it on the festival circuit?
You know, I did, we didn't play at any festivals actually. I didn't do a very good job in rehearsing festivals. I submitted to a bunch of festivals, but they were bigger ones. And it just, you know, in retrospect, the film just wasn't a good fit for these larger festivals. And, so rather than spend another year applying to lower tier festivals, I, you know, maybe against my better judgment, I just decided to release it. So I rented out some theaters actually, and we screened at, Anthology Film Archives in New York. I rented it out, we screened at a theater in New York, or I'm sorry, in Pittsburgh. Actually, we screened twice in Pittsburgh. And that was about it as far as screenings go. Then I just, you know, put it online after that.
And that's Amazon Prime?
Amazon Prime. It is on iTunes and Vimeo.
Okay, good. Got to get these out there. I'm trying to help you out here.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Okay, so when you had the screening in Pittsburgh, was it a full cast screening, or was it just you're renting out hoping people would show up?
Sort of both. You know, the cast and crew were invited, but so were, you know, really anybody. It was kind of, I would say it was half and half, people that I knew and people that, you know, just kind of came in from hearing the word of mouth advertisements or just coming out off the street. So, and it was about the same with New York. It was, you know, I think we had the two screenings because of the actors, and cast members in New York, and then the ones in Pittsburgh. So they kind of each got an opportunity to just see the film in a theater. We got a good turnout and a good response though, otherwise, you know, from people that hadn't been, involved in the film. So,
are you working on a second feature?
I am. Yeah, I'm actually writing right now, trying to get that worked out. And I mean, it'll probably be something on a similar budget level. Yeah, it's something I'm still kind of in the writing stages of right now.
Fair enough. Are you, since you've heard my interview, are you ready for fun questions?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, if you did listen, I always want to chat because some people don't. They tell me they did. They're like, what? I'm like, okay. Your favorite film?
Aguirre, The Wrath of God, I'd probably say if I had a knee-jerk reaction. And I, you know, I saw on, I think you guys did a review of that. You didn't really like it too much.
No, that was me. That was 100% okay. Me. Nobody else watched that. It didn't make the show. That was all me. I'll be honest.
But it's funny. I submitted this film to, Herzog's Rogue Film School. And I got accepted for this film that for The Mutineer. So I went to that in Munich and, I met him and, went to school, but, I like his stuff from the 70s, a lot, actually. Aguirre, The Wrath of God is up there. I also like, you know, I it would be hard for me to say that's my favorite film because I have a lot of, you know, films that I really like, so.
Yeah, but The Wrath of God is a strange one. I've been meaning to watch that for ages, so I did watch it, but it's not about me. Let's continue on. It's Friday night, you have friends over, you're going to watch a movie. What do you put on?
Let's say T2, Terminator 2.
Nothing wrong with some T2 on a Friday night.
Right.
Everybody's seen it, you can still talk, that's perfect.
Exactly. Yep.
Okay, the strangest movie on your DVD shelf?
I would say probably, I mean, not to go back to Herzog, but Even Dwarves Started Small. Have you ever seen that one?
I have not seen that.
That's a very bizarre, even for Herzog, it's a very bizarre film. It's about a group of little people who... They're sort of in this prison, but they take it over and rebel against this prison warden. It's shot in black and white in the late 60s, and I think it was shot an island off of Greece or something like that. A very bizarre, really bizarre movie. But
okay, what's this infatuation with Herzog? I mean, your favorite film, Herzog, your the strangest film. Do you own everything? Did you buy the big box set?
I have his Blu-ray box set. He's up there with some of my favorite filmmakers. I think he has, I think it's just sort of this, I think the tone of his films is sort of, and his outlook and his sort of, idea of, the human condition. I just sort of agree with, and it connects with me. I also like, Kubrick, of course. I mean, that's another big one. Terrence Malick. Those three are probably my big ones. But I mean, I could keep listing them, but those are probably up there with who, you know, I try to kind of really study.
Visual stimulated filmmakers. But I mean, now you've told me about, Herzog. I could see how The Mutineer, you wrote it now. It makes a lot more sense to me.
Right, yeah, it's kind of in that sort of bizarre, tone. Right, yeah. And I think we have like one real sort of review online, and I think the person that was, it's not a great review. I mean, I don't think they really, I think they went into it thinking this was either a serious film or sort of a slapstick comedy, one of the other two. And I don't think it fits into either of those two categories. So, I mean, if you're not going in with sort of expecting that, it can kind of be, I can understand how it can kind of take you aback and not really understand how to take that film. But, I think that tone is sort of an influence on this film.
I have to agree. Well, thank you for your time. But before you go, again, tell everybody where to find your film.
So it's, yeah, Amazon Prime. It's iTunes and Vimeo on demand. It's also available on DVD and Blu-ray on Amazon.
So do they get a signed poster or anything, or just a DVD, or?
Yeah, so shoot me an email and I'll send you a poster.
There you go. See, you got to get the stuff out there. Well, thank you for your time. You were awesome. I'm sorry about the Skype issues. It seems to be working fine for the last 5 minutes, so that's the way it goes.
Yeah.
And you have a great night.
Hey, you too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.